This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just 15 bucks a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Every team, every topic, everywhere, this is Believe.
Support for this podcast is provided by Subchuck Law. Revolution Recap thanks Subchuck Law for their support of our show, local independent media, and their mission of bringing unbiased truth. Revolution Recap would also like to thank Six Point Builders for their support. Six Point Builders are builders of fine custom homes in the Boston metropolitan area. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Revolution Recap, part of the Believe Network. We are coming to you after the New England Revolution won their fourth straight game. They are red hot in the month of June, hotter than the weather. And today they win 2-1 at FC Cincinnati on the heels of a brace by Giacomo Brioni. I'm Greg Johnstone. Joining me today is Tom Pinzone. Tom, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. You know, to get four wins in a row. And if you had turned the game off at halftime, you would have seen all that was worth seeing from a ref's perspective from this game. But of course, as part of our responsibilities for this podcast, I watched all the way through to the end, and just kind of glad that they pulled out a fourth win in a row.
Yep, 3 points is 3 points. Certainly a turnaround too from, I feel like, the last time we did a show together. I feel like every time we've done a show together, Tom, it's been quite miserable. But here we are. In the midst of a win streak, 12 points in the last four games for this team. They are now 2 points from the playoff line, and they have two games in hand. Their goal differential is still a mess, so we're not exactly putting down futures on MLS Cup just yet, but certainly a big turnaround, and certainly the chances of playoffs is looking a lot more positive. But before we get into this game and the Revs' turnaround in form over the past month, we do want to talk to you about our sponsor, BetOnline. BetOnline is your number one source for all of your sports betting needs this season, from baseball, golf, soccer, right all the way to the top fights in UFC, MMA, and boxing. Every stat, every matchup, and even live odds and spreads while the games are being played. When the game is over, head on over to our online casino and get in on a game of blackjack or poker, or unwind with one of our over 150 slots games. So head over to our website today and get in on the action. Use promo code BLEAV, B-L-E-A-V, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. That is promo code BLEAV, B-L-E-A-V, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet online, where the game starts. All right, Tom, let's hop right into this game. 2-1 at FC Cincinnati. By the way, we've never lost at Cincinnati, which I was a little surprised, but also not surprised to see. Apparently the Revolution have a phenomenal record in Cincinnati. We give those guys tons and tons of fits. And tonight being no different. So what is your key takeaway from tonight's game in Cincinnati? And by the way, our key takeaways are brought to you by our friends over at the Rebellion Supporters Group. Be sure to check them out on Twitter at NERebellion and their website at NERebellion.org. Tom, what's your key takeaway here?
Like I said, I mean, it's a cliche, but, you know, some cliches are cliches for a good reason. The tale of two halves. You know, I thought the first half, they played well. Two well-taken goals, which is shocking to say, because they're both scored by Veroni. Attacking play off the left-hand side between, Boateng and Jones, I thought, that was really effective. And, you know, they, they stopped Cincinnati. Cincinnati didn't really get anything going. It was kind of hard to figure out how exactly this team had scored four goals on Wednesday night and won 9 out of their last 10. But, you know, I mean, they were, Cincinnati was kicking the ball out of bounds all by themselves under no pressure. But anyway, you know, good first half. The second half, just in general, the first 20 minutes was just, you know, broken up by fouls and yellow cards and guys throwing themselves to the ground and complaining to the referee. And the Revs, you know, displaying the second half was, it's pretty miserable. That's about as bad as you can play, especially 11 against 10, even 11 against 9. And you know, once again, okay, they won, but, you know, they clung to a one goal lead in the last, you know, 20, 25 minutes of the game. So, you know, good. A lot of people are kind of, you know, a couple people on Twitter get on my case, just like, oh, just enjoy it. And it's like, I don't know how you could enjoy watching the second half of that game.
Oh, well, the second half certainly was not that great. I think in general, though, this team, let's focus on the first half a little bit, because maybe I can pull some positivity out of you, Tom. That first half, I know it was a heavily rotated squad from Cincinnati. I know there's no Matt Miazga. I know there's no Miles Robinson, but, and I know there's other rotations too, but, you know, they were the better team by far. I mean, the Revs it was a completely one-sided game, in my opinion. I know the expected goals were like 0.3, but the Revs looked phenomenal in the first half, probably one of the best halves of soccer we've seen so far. And it's not like the Revs weren't missing people. Obviously, Sean Kalai has been out for a while. And by the way, Seth Maycomber of the Blazing Musket is reporting that is going to be a long-term injury. And Tom, I know you've talked about it in weeks past, that it sounds like everything that has kind of come out that the team has told us about swelling and they're looking to evaluate it and yada, yada, yada. It sounds like it's a long-term thing. So don't expect to see Thomas Schonkelei back, but we don't have Thomas Schonkelei. There's no Dylan Barrero in this lineup tonight. Waiting here for an update on what's wrong with Dylan Barrero. But you know, they're missing players too. And the Revs went out there and played phenomenally in a road game against one of the better teams in the East. So I thought that was a really positive sign of this team. I don't know if it's just the fact that they're winning again. Whatever happened the first few months has gone away. But this just seems like a completely different team altogether. Now, the second half, I agree with you 100% that, you know, it's not perfect. There's still a lot to improve upon here. And I was really taken aback by how poorly that second half went. Even at 1.2, you know, Hagelin came off with an injury. Cincinnati had a red card, and the Revs are still parking the bus. They're unable to counter and really keep the ball down at the other half. We got a question here from Russ Goldman. I think it's fair to question going so defensive in the second half with the subs and the change of shape. Do you agree? I think that's a very, very fair question to ask. And I'll oppose it to you, and then I'll give one more thought. But obviously the performance in the second half was poor, Tom. But do you also question Caleb Porter and going so defensive and parking the bus and really trying to ride out that 2-0 halftime lead?
I mean, it's not surprising from Porter. We haven't had that many opportunities to see what Porter does when he has a lead, but we've seen it in the last 4 weeks. And, you know, this is pretty classic, you know, old school, shut the game down, which is, you know, from Porter, you know, Porter's whole, like, you know, macho man, braveheart nonsense that he rolls out every time he talks. It's not surprising that he wants to see games closed out. There's six defenders on the field. Like, I'm sorry. Like, it's great to see Brandon Bye come back, but you need six defenders to play 11 against 10 and then 11 against 9. I mean, you know, and for all the criticism that we give Porter about, you know, being obsessed with keeping the ball, which of course he's not obsessed with, even though he is, why can't you just keep the ball? You know, there's questions on you talking about, oh, Esmer this, why didn't they do that, blah, blah, blah. It's like, just keep the ball. It's 11 against 10 and then it's 11 against 9. You win the ball back, connect the pass, just start knocking it around and make him come and chase you. They're not going to come and press 11 against 9. They could have kept the ball 3-4 minutes every time they won it back. And instead, like, they were launching counterattacks like they were the team that were, like, they were losing playing with 10 men. I don't know. It's not surprising because, again, this is just, you know, Porter's, you know, this, he thinks he's, you know, again, he thinks he's in Braveheart. He thinks this is war. It's not war. It's a soccer game, and you should take advantage of things like playing 11 against 9, but just don't let the other team touch the ball. The first half was good. But it's tough. You know, it's tough to watch them play like that for 45 minutes and then, you know, play the way they played in the second half.
Well, it reminds me of the Nashville game, too. You know, road game, take a 2-0 lead, and then, you know, you need Ivicic to come up big with a few saves, and you're hanging on by the skin of your teeth at the final whistle. And you come away with a 2-1 win, and really you should be coming away with a solid 3-1, 3-0 win. That's really never in doubt, too. The other thing, too, is that Cincinnati lost their composure completely. I mean, the red card they got was on an unnecessary foul. I think they got two yellow cards for dissent. I mean, they were losing their minds, and the fact that they were back in that game, I don't know, room for improvement in terms of closing it out. Very happy that they got the 3 points, but I think it's very they're going to go ultra defensive one of these games, and it's going to bite them. They've gotten away with it so far in Nashville and in Cincinnati, but I think that's going to give them problems down the road. The only other thing I'll say is that they've had some injuries. So if I'm going to defend Caleb Porter here, if I take the devil's advocate side of things, I would say that they do not particularly want, there's no offensive subs that they could use. So you take off Eamon Boateng and you put in Mensah, and you take off Hill and you put in Brandon Bye. Outside of Jack P, there weren't really any other quote unquote offensive pieces that you could bring in. Right. But with that being said, like, I think you're right. Yeah, control the ball. Take time off of the clock there instead of just parking the bus. I don't think you need six guys along the back line there, and I certainly don't think you need Nick Lima in there either. Once Brandon Bye comes back in, what's Nick Lima's purpose back there? I don't know. It just seems like, I don't know. It seemed a little too extreme for me. So I agree with that. Oh, go ahead.
And they took they brought Mensah on. To what end? What do you need Mensah out there for? The Cincinnati already took off Kelsey. They already took off their tall physical center forward. So there was absolutely no need to bring Mensah on. You know, it's like the back four was defending. The back four was defending well. Like they didn't really need any help. So it's just, even then, like, okay, if you're looking to kind of shore things up, you know, you should have just done what you did last week. But, you know, you brought Farrell on and stuck him in midfield. That seemed like a bit, that seemed like a much, much smarter choice, trying to hold on to a lead late on, last week. You know, bringing Mensah on, there's no need for it. You know, Romney and Arriaga were fine at the back for, it was the fourth week in a row. They don't need any help.
Mm-hmm. Are you surprised Kessler's coming on instead of, or Mensah's coming on instead of Kessler in that role? I assume Mensah is just kind of, as you mentioned, the tall center back, clear out aerials, et cetera, kind of in the Omar Gonzalez role we've seen in the past. But are you surprised Kessler's not getting that role as the defensive specialist closer?
Not really, because this is just what Porter does. His substitutions are so predictable. I mean, it's like he clearly has this all planned out before the game starts, and he doesn't react. I mean, let me ask you this, Greg. Do you think he would ever do what Pat Noonan did? Come in at halftime, be like, all right, this isn't working, I'm making three changes. Do you think Porter would ever do that?
No, especially not with this team, because I don't think he likes a lot of the pieces. I mean, we talk about Jack P, which, I mean, that could, we could do a 10-minute segment on Jack P alone, how he's good enough to call back from RIFC, but, you need an offensive player to kind of hold the ball and possess the ball, and he's still not getting into the game. You'd opt for a six-man back line. I mean, I don't know what's the game scenario in which Caleb Porter is putting in Jack P? You know what I mean? So I think there are just some pieces that he just doesn't find very valuable. I just don't think he likes a lot of these depth pieces. Especially right now, I don't see him making widespread changes unless, I don't know. I think he made some widespread changes in one of the Club America games, right? But that was just, this team's disastrous and we need to change everything going. Like, I don't know. I really think he has his guys and his set 11, and he really doesn't want to stray too far from it.
Yeah, and he's arrogant too. That's the other part of it. If he makes changes, it makes it look like he got something wrong.
You know what, though? We have not given Caleb Porter credit for a lot, though, but he could be playing Kessler over Romney, and Romney is back in, and I believe it's 4-3.
You're not going to give him credit for that, are you? Come on.
Sure, why not? He could go back to Kessler.
He was forced into it, and he can't drop him now.
Forced into it by Sam Minton. Sam Minton's strong arms in him, putting Dave Romney in.
No, he was forced into it because Kessler got suspended. Romney came in. They won a game.
Yeah, but Kessler's back.
What are you going to do?
Kessler's back. Kessler's back.
Yeah, but they won when Kessler was out, and again, and again, and again. You can't drop Romney.
Yeah, you can't. Oh, no, you, like, trust me, like, logically, you can't, but if Caleb Porter wanted to be stubborn and, you know, only play his guys, he could absolutely just go back to Kessler and say, yeah, Kessler's better.
Yeah, why not? Sure. He's only being stubborn with Polster.
Well, let's get, we have some Polster questions later. I don't even remember what my key takeaway was. I was going to talk about, oh, Brandon Bye's back. Good for Brandon Bye. We're time to come in as the sixth man, as we've kind of talked about. But my key takeaway is it's really nice to see Brandon Bye back. Anything you want to say on Brandon Bye, Tom?
Yeah, no, it's great. I mean, it's great to have, you know, it's great that we have Jones and Bye back, just as Tronkly and Pereiro are now out. So maybe next year we'll see all four of the very talented wide players we have on the field all at the same time. But at the rate at which they seem to pick up knee injuries, it doesn't seem possible. But no, it's great to see Bye back. One of the benefits of seeing Bye back is that Trey will stop asking about Nick Lima every week. So I'm really looking forward to not having to answer that question, which I'm assuming we'll have to get to that one tonight.
Yeah, Trey says, with Bye getting some minutes, how long until Lima is not touching the field, especially since Mensah seems to be the go-to defensive sub? Yeah, I think Lima is back to the bench with a fully healthy Brandon Bye, and I don't see many scenarios in which he comes in, although I think I guess he'd be your backup right back over Andrew Farrell, and then I don't even know who's on the left side. Because Peyton Miller is still injured, correct?
So Peyton Miller has a new injury.
Yes.
So those of you keeping track, he came back from his foot injury, didn't play a single minute for the team, and now has a thigh injury. So
and Ryan Spaulding is also hurt. I don't know what exactly they're doing. They must be doing Oklahoma drills in practice or something. I don't know what's going on down there, but Nick Lima still will probably get some cameos as the backup right back. So
I played what, 8 minutes? So I mean, it's gonna, you know, he's not gonna come out next week and play the full 90.
No. But he'll transition back to the bench. We won't get the Nick Lima question every week. At least he stopped asking about Ben Sweat. I think I put a squash to that with when I exposed how bad of a hugger Ben Sweat was. So listener questions. Let's get to our listener mailbag, which we've already kind of dipped into. Brought to you today by Subject Law. You can find Subject Law's website in our show notes. We already talked to you about Russ Golden. We do got to talk about Giacomo Vrioni. Nick A. says, was this the best performance from a Rev center forward since Adam Bukselep? Tom, we have been a little critical of Vrioni in the past, slightly, minorly. What was your thoughts on his performance? And is this the best performance you've seen from him or any other Rev center forward since the days of Adam Buksa?
Well, I mean, we're forgetting about Gustavo Bowe, you know, how quickly we forget about him. I mean, he was here, you know, just last year. No, I don't think it matched up to some of the performances that we saw from Bowe last year when he was fit enough to play. But, you know, it's unquestionably his best performance. I mean, to be honest, when he actually was able to control a soccer ball and shoot it into the back of the net from outside the penalty area, that by itself was already his best game. The fact that he was able to knock that header in under absolutely no pressure because he wasn't marked. But now he put it on target. We criticized him quite a bit about his inability to find the target. So, yeah, I think it's probably by a comfortable distance his best game in a Revs uniform. Especially, I think he had a two-goal game last year in Leagues Cup, but it was against a – it wasn't against a very good team.
No, it was a hat trick against San Luis. Some of those goals were I don't want to say tap-ins, but they were you'd expect him to finish it. He did have the brace against Club America on the road, which were junk time goals. It seems like when he scores, he's not afraid of braces. I feel like he's had some. I think this Dan Shulman, who's in the Revs comms department, I believe he's tweeted out this is his fourth brace with the Revs, which is kind of nuts. Let me see if I can find that stat here. But he scores goals in bunches, it seems like, and here three goals in two games. Yeah, this is his second multi-goal game in MLS for the Revs and fourth in all competitions. And it's also the first time he's scored in consecutive league matches for the club. And I believe, too, he didn't score a goal on the road coming into this season, too. So he's turned things around a little bit. It seems like he's improved. I will say, you know, he's got a good left foot. We've never denied he doesn't have a good left foot. It's his right foot that's the problem. It's when he can take one touch and shoot with his right foot and instead he decides to cut back onto his left. The ball's taken off his feet easily. That's when, you know, the ugly side of Rioni comes into play. But he's got a great left foot. He's got a cannon. And that first goal, too, you know, nice first touch. You know, that he can do that. I'm not doubting that he can do that. I think the problem is, and we've talked about it, there's only so many situations in which he can score, and he needs a little bit of time. He needs to get it onto his left foot. Well, he can score it with a header now. I was happy to see a header from him today. So I'm not completely turning a 180 on Brioni and saying that he's finally broken through. There are still some discrepancies in his game that will hold him back a little bit, but I do think he has improved considerably from where he was last year. Is he still going to lead the Revs to MLS Cup? I have my doubts.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know that I'd go so far as to say he has a great left foot. He has a functional left foot, which is good because he's incapable of using his right foot. I don't know. I honestly really am not going to get excited about Veroni. Like, I think, given his track record, there's just no reason to get too excited. Mm-hmm. I don't know. If he gets, you know, 5 goals in 4 games, okay, sure. But I don't know. There's no reason to think he's capable of that.
All right. Cursed Revs, keep an eye on that. If we get 2 more goals in the next 2 games, you'll get a tweet from Cursed Revs. Revs Fan 1776 says, why is Rioni suddenly able to finish in the box? I don't think it's a sudden thing. I think it's just, although I will say too, I don't know if you noticed this, both of those goals, he wasn't the closest player to goal. So it seems like he was kind of dropping back off a little bit, and he kind of found some space where I think Esmir was the one on the second goal that was kind of charging into the box, whereas he kind of sat back and the cross kind of came to him. So maybe that might be a thing where he's, you know, since he can't beat, you know, any defenders, you know, and he can't get behind any defenders, maybe he's just staying put and someone else is making the run behind him, and maybe that's creating space for him. If he can create space that way, that's fine. I don't know if that's a Porter tactic or not, but that seemed to be a trend on both of those goals. How big of a bonus does Rioni get after tonight's game? I don't know if that means he has a goal bonus in his contract. I don't know that answer, but he's getting paid handsomely enough, so I'm not going to lose sleep over it if his bonus is zero. Dave says, I may have been harsh on my earlier criticism of the team. Rumor has it Porter wants another 9. Is it to play alongside Rioni or to replace him? And Tom Bogert said on his YouTube channel, too, that the Revs might be in the market for a designated player 9. That obviously would depend on some contract information. We don't need to go into all that. But if they can sell Rioni, if they can open up a designated player spot. But I would imagine it is to replace Rioni. I don't think that they are going to go with a 2-striker setup. Although, I guess, with Barrero and Shankalai being out, who knows? Maybe they'll move pieces around if they're both out long-term. But I'll kind of tweak this question too, Tom, which is, do you think the Revs, who are apparently in the market to replace Rioni, do you think tonight's performance, do you think that changes the minds there, or do you think they're still in the market after tonight?
But this is the problem we talked about in preseason. People say, oh, we need to get rid of Rioni. Well, the only way you need to get rid of him is if other teams want to acquire him, which means you have to start playing better and start scoring goals. But then you are not going to want to get rid of him if he's scoring goals. It's still the same equation as it was all the way back in February. If he's playing well and scoring goals, other teams might be interested, but you would be less inclined to sell him because he's doing the thing that you're paying him to do. And then if he goes on to another one of his cold streaks for, you know, the next 3 or 4 games, then teams are going to be less interested in buying him because he's not scoring when you're more interested in getting rid of him. It's a difficult situation to be in. So I don't know. And I saw what Tom said, and you know, they're interested in bringing another DP. It's like, well, they have to find, again, it's like, I don't see the magical solution that people keep asking for, which is Veroni just disappears somehow and they bring in another DP. I think the best thing that they could do is, you know, they can open up a roster spot at any time. They can waive Tommy McNamara anytime they want. 3 weeks ago would have been a good time to do it. You know, today, tomorrow, and open up a senior roster spot and try and get in, at least get a striker in that can be on the bench to push him. Give him someone else that he can, you know, can come in and step in if he's not playing well or if they need to rotate. You know, they've got they've been living a charmed life here, not having to play midweek games. They haven't played a midweek game since April 9th. So that's not going to continue. So at some point, you know, he's going to need to be rotated, and they don't even have an option to rotate him.
And let's pause here for a second, because there's a few rules, because MLS roster rules are confusing as all hell. And so I want to hit pause here before we get a little further. But you can buy out one player a year. They've used the buyout on Batch League. And when you buy out a player, you get any roster relief. And that means, so for Vatsleek's case, you get the international roster spot and whatever money you owe him, that doesn't count against the cap, et cetera, et cetera. MLS rules they're rumored to be changing in the near future, although that I haven't heard anything on recently, but they're considering adding a second buyout as early as this season. So you could buy out Vrioni and open up the designated player spot. You could get them, you know, you would have to pay Vrioni what he's owed in his contract, but that doesn't count against the cap. You'd get the cap hit back. So you get the international, the DP spot back. But that hasn't changed yet. So as of right now, the Revs can't buy out Vrioni. But when you talk about waiving players, Tom, waiving is a different mechanism where you can waive a player and get them off your roster and you still owe them the whole contract. And then whatever was their cap hit, that's still applied to your team. So this is what Portland with Ivicic waived, you know, they waived Ivicic earlier in the season, and they still have their cap hit that goes against the cap in his case. But they were able to get the roster spot back. So what you're talking about when you talk about waiving Tommy McNamara, because this is something that I think a lot of people get mixed up, that you're not buying out McNamara, you're waiving him, which essentially would, you're giving him his contract, you're telling him to go, his salary still counts against the cap for the Revs, but you open up the senior roster spot. That's essentially what we're talking about here. And in Vrioni's case, if you waive him, you don't get the designated player spot, you don't get the cap relief, and so you are still stuck with it. It doesn't open up a designated player or an international roster spot by waiving him. So you would need to sell Vrioni. And, you know, if he's scoring goals, like you said, maybe you do generate some interest internationally. I don't think you're going to get anyone throughout MLS to trade for him. But maybe you're able to sell him at a lower price than you acquired him for. Maybe you can recoup some of that money and maybe you can balance the book so you open up the designated player spot again. But that seems like a bit of a tough ask, considering how his struggles here. Because if you're selling him to a lower league, you know, he's not going to agree to take a pay cut. So you'd have to find a team, you know, maybe at a lower level of competition that's still willing to spend that amount of money on Vrioni. So you're still kind of stuck with him. So when Tom Boger's talking about acquiring another designated player, to me, the clear path is Sean Kalai. If he goes on season-ending injury list, you do get roster relief, so you do get his designated player spot, so you could acquire a designated player that way. The problem is then you have four designated players next year. So I have a little bit of skepticism as well, along with you, Tom, about how that works out with acquiring another designated player nine. But I do think that a forward of some degree is needed for this year. Kai Kamara would have been great. He's over in LAFC. He scored this week. It would have been nice to have gotten Kai Kamara. That's the perfect like backup striker. Or if Bobby Wood just ever gets healthy again, that would also be great. But I mean, there is literally no one behind Vrioni right now. And that's going to be an issue when you hit midweek games. So anyway, long answer there, but I think we kind of covered it. Anything to add, Tom, or should I just move on?
No, I mean, that's the thing. Like if a fourth DP spot opened up, that's probably not going to be till next year. But if Chocolate goes on the season ending injury list and they have a DP spot open, I think they need to get a central midfielder, you know, try and get a central midfielder to come in and take that DP spot. And then you still get rid of, you know, you still get rid of McNamara, and that opens up a senior roster spot, and you try and bring in a striker that, again, at the very least can be a backup, because, you know, Wood can't be relied upon, and you have someone that can at least push Vrioni. I think that would really maybe move things with this team forward quite a bit, because the midfield is, you know, I think the midfield is the area where they have a lot of issues, assuming that Verone stays on this run of form and, you know, nothing happens to him. He doesn't get injured. He doesn't get suspended. Like, nothing can happen to Verone, and he has to perform week in and week out. And it's, you know, it's tough to think that those two things are both going to continue to happen.
Yeah, Verone is going to just stay on this form the rest of the season. Braces every week. And the important thing is get Tommy McNamara off the roster. Right, Tom?
Well, yeah, he's just... there's no use for him. He doesn't play. He's
not either. No, you're right. Well, we got one more question here on Verone. With Verone's latest performance, will the Revs move him to a non-designated player contract in 2025 or make a move out for him during the summer transfer window? We talked about moving him out the summer transfer window, moving him to a non-designated player contract in 2025. You're asking him to take a pay cut. I don't know how you convince him into that. I don't know. You'd need to do some black magic there to convince him to take a pay cut. Maybe if you give him a longer contract, but I don't think you really want to do that. So I think you're stuck with Verone as a designated player unless you're buying him out, unless the rules change and you can buy him out now or you can buy him out next season. I think you're stuck with Verone because even if you bring in a new striker and he moves to the bench, you know, that might just be a waste DP spot for the rest of the year. So let's see what else we got here. Brian Flaherty says, amazing, 4 straight wins and still 1 point from the bottom. I guess that's the other way of looking at it, from 2 points from the playoff line. So that doesn't sound as impressive. Isaac says, do you think the Revs were the better team today or did they get a little lucky? Tom, I'll let you handle that one.
I mean, like I said, yeah, I mean, in the first half, you know, they played really well, you know, two well-taken goals. They seemed to be able to move the ball up the field pretty quickly and pretty effectively. And, you know, they had a couple, before the first goal, they had a couple early balls into the penalty area that, you know, Verone made a different run than what the pass was for, which is, you know, typical stuff. And then, of course, he complains about it. The first half was great. It was a good performance on the road. They're taking advantage of the fact that Cincinnati played midweek. But the second half, you know, the second half kind of ruined the whole thing. You know, when the game ended, it's just like, okay, yeah, all right, great. They held on and got a 2-1 win playing with 6 defenders, 11 against 9. You know, yippee. I mean, it's like, I don't know. I get it. Yeah, they've won 4 in a row. You know, they're starting to move off the bottom of the table. You know, there's lots of things to be positive about. But actually, you know, actually watching the game, there wasn't really a lot there in the second half.
Does MLS do Coach of the Month? I mean, is Caleb Porter a Coach of the Month candidate here?
Yeah, probably. We'll never hear the end of it. We won't. No, because he'll be looking right on. I'm a MLS Cup champion. I won June Player of the Month or June Coach of the Month.
Hey, unbeaten in June. Unbeaten in June. Last time I was on the show before I took a vacation there, I went away for 3 weeks. We named that podcast at the beginning of the month Unbeaten in June. And that's still technically true. So we might run the table in June, which is pretty crazy. You know what? I'm beginning to believe in this team. And a few other people are too. Traeger says, Bursty says, I appreciate Ivicic making the adjustment to go for those close shots tonight rather than freezing. But he also says, are the Revs worth believing again? And then Chad says here, are they back? Then he also says, taking nothing seriously until post Copa America. And then Locomotive Crayon Flag FC says, at what point do you start to really believe in this team? This was the first time all season I thought maybe they could pull together, but I'm not convinced yet. Is this another win versus a big team? A statement win with everyone healthy? The start of the playoffs. Just curious where you personally draw that line. So, Tom, do you believe?
No. I mean, no. But believe in what exactly?
Well, let's do it this way. I mean, a few months ago, we were talking about Porter on the hot seat. I personally don't think he's on the hot seat at this point anymore. And also, this team looks like they are potentially going to be in the playoffs. Maybe that's a little optimistic, but they're playing like the team that I think we thought they could be. I think getting DeJuan Jones back, looking a lot more promising. I thought DeJuan Jones had an impactful game tonight. I think Dave Rami, I think Arriaga has turned out to be a pretty good signing. I wasn't convinced of him at first. He's turned out to be pretty solid overall. This team, even with injuries, seems like they are piecing things together, and it's not perfect. It's not pretty, but even with their kind of flaws, they're still getting results. So, I mean, this is a team that right now, I mean, I was talking with Sean, 4 to 6 weeks ago, if they're better than Chicago, now, I mean, I think they're legitimate playoff contenders. I mean, do you think they're legitimate playoff contenders yet, or do you think this is still a bit of a mirage?
Yeah, sure. I mean, they're playoff contenders. Because again, if you look at the table, they've gotten four wins from four, and all of a sudden they're right back in the mix. So it's, I mean, yeah, they were talking about during the broadcast. I mean, it's MLS.
Well,
nine teams out of 15 make the playoffs. So I mean, you've got to be really, really, really bad to be out of the playoff, to be out of playoff contention in June. And that's where they were headed, right? They were headed to being out of contention for the playoffs in June, which it's almost unfathomable that that could be. I mean, Toronto did it last year, right? Toronto, by this point, their season was over. That's pretty rare. So yeah, I mean, sure, they could continue on, and they can make the playoffs. You know,
do you think this team could make a deep playoff run?
No.
Okay, there we go. I just had to find your limit. You know what I mean? I just had to find your limit. So that's a good measuring stick. I think I'm in the same point too, where this team, you know, could get into the play-in game or whatever. But you know, if they line up against Messi, or if they face off against Columbus, in a whatever 3-game series or whatever the hell the setup is these days, I guess I shouldn't have to worry too much about the playoff setup this year. But if they match up against an elite team, it's gonna be very hard for them to scrape points, because we don't need to dive too heavily into it. Dendun says, I'm thinking we should add a defensive midfielder to solidify the team. We're missing that box-to-box midfielder. I mean, Buck could do it, but he might be leaving soon. What do you think, Tom? You kind of touched on earlier, you think a midfielder is where the team needs to add. Is Dendun, are you in agreement with him?
Yeah, well, I think he's right about Buck. Buck and Esmer, I would imagine at this point, are going to be looking for an opportunity to get out of here. I mean, Buck for sure. Buck has got to be pretty frustrated at this point. He came in last week and he played really well. The team had their best game of the season, particularly in attacking play, particularly in moving the ball up the field in a cohesive way and actually being able to make use of the central midfielders in a positive way. And then he gets dropped for, the coach's, the coach's golden boy who can do no wrong. So if I was Buck, I said this before, if I was Buck, I would just be like, get me out of here. July 1st, I literally don't care. Just, I will get on a plane and I will fly anywhere in Europe that will take me. And I can't understand why Buck would want to be here anymore. So if Buck was to get his move, and honestly, I hope he does, because he's a young player. He's a talented player. He needs to go and find out if he can cut it in Europe, if he can develop into a good center mid, or maybe he finds himself back out wide. It just doesn't seem like it's going to happen here. So I for him, I think it would be best for him to get a move abroad. And unfortunately, it's to the Revs. The Revs really kind of lose out because they didn't get that much out of him while he was here. Porter clearly doesn't seem interested in playing him. We've talked about Esmer before. He only plays Esmer because he has to. Like, Porter clearly does not like playing young players. I think Buck, if he gets an offer, he's going to say, hey, look, you guys aren't playing me. Why should I stay here? Kay, appears to be hurt and has been playing pretty poorly. Matt Polster is Matt Polster. And Ian Harkes really seems to be the only one that can get on the field and play well. He's the only one that's been able to unlock that combination. He gets the play, and he plays well when he does. And you can't say that for Polster and Kay, because they don't play well. And Buck, Buck doesn't get any opportunities.
Well, I know also, if we're talking about adding another midfielder, you're adding to another crowded midfield, and Buck is already not getting minutes. I mean, even if you don't want to take the loss, because as we talked to Tom Bogart, he came on our show and he said, Buck's value last year was 5 to 7 million or whatever. And now it's, probably like 2 to 4 million. I mean, you've killed the value of Noel Buck, from an investment standpoint. So if you're the Revs and you're not playing him, even if you're not selling him, like, you should be arranging a loan. It might not be with a Premier League team. Maybe it's with a championship team. Or maybe it's with a Bundesliga team, or maybe it's a lower level team than you thought you'd sell him to. Because I think at one point he was training with Tottenham, right? So, you know,
he's nowhere near good enough for Tottenham. But anyway,
but you could have sold him to Tottenham, and obviously he'd go on loan and whatever. But like, you know, is Tottenham still interested in Noel Buck? He's getting like 20 minutes off the bench. He's playing behind, you know, Polster and Kay, right? So like, no, like seriously, like what?
Well, no, I agree.
You lost so much money on Noel Buck. You've totally mishandled him. Not just from a development standpoint, but from a dollar standpoint, from the front office standpoint, like you've mishandled Noel Buck completely. So, I mean, he's getting called up to the England U-20s. You know what I mean? And so anyway, I mean, you got to arrange a loan, you know, in my opinion, like, because how many years are you going to just have him ride the bench? You know what I mean?
That's so the anyway. Point. There's no point in having young players if you're not going to play him.
Yep.
So, again,
we could talk about Jack P. He was playing in Rhode Island FC and you call him up. And he's played. He hasn't played yet, right? Has he played?
No.
Has he gotten into any of these games?
No, not. I mean, he's just sat there on the bench. Total waste of his time. And you know, and REFC, you know, they gave him a chance straight away. I mean, and he was playing well. He had 2 assists in 4 games. You know, a lot of their fans felt like, you know, he was like the missing piece. And then they took him out of that situation, brought him back, and now he's sitting on the bench. I mean, it's just. Yeah, you know, the thing is too is, you know, one of the more enjoyable things in recent seasons had been seeing, you know, these young players come through the academy and get opportunities and play well. But you know, if we're going to be stuck with, I mean, we're definitely stuck with Porter for, you know, at least the rest of this season, probably next season as well, which is depressing. If we're stuck with Porter, you know, if you look at what he did in Columbus, you know, just get used to young players not playing.
MLS coach of the month for June 2024, Caleb Porter, by the way.
Yep.
The mastermind behind the turnaround of the 2024 New England Revolution. Just wanted to throw that out there. We did have some questions here from Teal Forever. I'm going to skip around a little bit. By the way, this is being recorded right after the game, so if these questions seem out of order, a little unorganized, it's because they are. But Teal Forever gave us a question. Is it just me or does this organization have no idea how to bring players from Revs 2 to the main team? Jordan Adebayo-Smith not being here is nothing short of a travesty. Buck and Esmir only end up playing because of injuries. Jack P is nowhere to be seen. Other youngins haven't seen the field. Is this normal for MLS? I thought Revs 2 and our academy was generally good. And I think this is a good point. What is the pathway for the Revs? And I think, you know, we talk about Kurt Adolfo, and a lot of talk has been around him as the GM, but I think, you know, part of the reason he's the GM or whatever sporting director, but part of the reason he's the sporting director is from his time as technical director and seeing the pro pathway, and that pathway is kind of, you know, cut off right now. There's not really a clear link as much as there was. It seemed like there was a year or two ago, and even a few years ago, 2021, 2020, you know, you had guys like John Bell and Maciel coming up. Even you could throw in Ryan Spalding there, where they were making, you know, a good impression down at Revs 2, and you know, they were able to fill kind of bit roles with the Revs. We really haven't seen any of that from Revs 2 in the past couple of years. I know Esmir has started the past few games, but we talk about on this show about how that seems to be situational, and you know, maybe because there's 3 or 4 other wingers that are hurt and Noel Buck can't get consistent minutes anymore. So do you think this is an indictment on the academy and the pathway and Revs 2 and kind of the developmental as a whole? Or do you think that, you know, this might be a Porter issue and a first team problem that the young guys aren't getting the minutes that they should?
Yeah, no, I mean, there's good players on Revs 2. You know, I haven't watched.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
I've watched him play in a couple of weeks. I've watched him play 4 or 5 times this year. Patrick Leal is, he's 21 years old. He spent a lot of time in Europe. He's a pretty talented player. He could potentially be helping this team out a little bit here and there as well. And then you have, Maciel. Maciel's 24. Like, he's come back from injury. He's proven that he's healthy. And he's someone that, I thought he had played, he played well here and there with the Revs over the last couple of years. And the guys that were moved up from Revs too, Souza and who else? Peyton Miller's been injured the whole season. Souza, and then what was it, Malcolm Fry? Like, I think there was some odd choices there. I mean, Malcolm Fry was not that impressive when he played for Revs 2 last year. I was really kind of surprised that he was even moved up. So I think maybe identifying who should be moved up to the senior, the supplemental roster. I think they maybe made a couple of mistakes there, but it doesn't really matter now because they're blocked. They're not going to, it doesn't seem like they're going to play. It doesn't seem like they're going to get an opportunity. I mean, like you said. If Panayiotou wasn't going to play tonight, like, he's never going to play. I mean, they had one other attacking player on the bench, and he still doesn't get an opportunity, I don't know. It's, I don't see how Anolfo isn't concerned because, like you said, like, this whole player development thing, like, that was kind of like what got him the job. So you would think that he wants to see players from the academy to come through the team and do well, because that was what he was all about until he got the sporting director role. So I can't imagine that he's thrilled seeing the young players get as limited options as they've been getting.
By the way, there was a quote from this week that didn't get a lot of play, at least on Twitter, and this was buried in the back of a Blazing Musket article, but I didn't tweet it out intentionally because I wanted to see if anyone would see this and send it out. But I read this and I thought this was a weird quote. This was from Seth's article. He was talking about Dick Lima talking about Esmir. He's got a quote here from Caleb Porter. Quote, I think he's played really well. He's talking about Esmir. He's 19 years old, so it's really promising to see a kid of that age start to mature and blossom and become more goal dangerous. That's the one thing I've said all year. He needs to make sure he contributes goals. It's great to see the last two games he's done that, and that he's making good decisions in the final third, that he's being aggressive when he needs to be, but he's also finding the right pass as well when that's a better decision. We'll get to that later because that came back. We'll talk about Esmir tonight. But the quote continues, and this is the interesting part. I want him to continue. I told him that right after the next game. I needed another goal next game. He can't relax and think he's arrived and think he is, like you guys are all saying, the next coming. Is he mad that that the media and fans think Esmir is going to be good? Is that what that means? Like you guys are all saying? Are you joking? Like, why would you say that?
Yeah, why do you have to put that little part in there? Like you
he
guys
can't relax and think he's arrived and think he is, like you guys are all saying, the next coming.
So is he trying to say that?
Is that Esmir sucks? Is that where, yeah. I mean, what? Okay.
I feel like he's trying to say, like, Rev's Twitter is, like, they're overhyping Esmir.
Are we not supposed to be excited about Esmir? I mean, that's...
Does Porter want Esmir to play? No. You can be excited about Matt Polster all you want.
He needs to just stay locked in and keep working hard and keep grinding and keep improving. If he does that, then maybe he'll have a career for the next 15 years.
I do remember seeing it. It's too much. I can't, my whole life can't be analyzing what Caleb Porter says. It's just every now and then I'll be sitting there like, oh yeah, remember that ridiculous thing that he said? Like I was looking at, I can't remember what it was. My wife and I are watching the game tonight and she's like, oh, they put a guy behind the wall. I was like, oh yeah, because Porter's now, I was like, yeah. I said, remember he said the first time they played Cincinnati that he's never seen someone score by shooting out of the wall before? I honestly want to go back to not Bruce as a like a coach, but like it was just much simpler. He didn't say anything ever. So there was no point in paying attention.
Well, I really want to like Caleb Porter. Like I want a coach that says what he's thinking and, you know, is open with the media and open with the fans. And like we've gotten that, but sometimes I'm just like, I don't know how I'm supposed to interpret this. If he does that, then maybe he'll have a career for the next 15 years. But if he wants to be really good, he's going to have to grind for the next 15 years. So is this an attitude thing?
He's not a warrior, Greg. He's not a warrior.
He's not.
Anyway, Greg, let me ask you this. Do you think Esmer would run through a brick wall if Porter told him to? I don't think so. Do you think Matt Polster would run through a brick wall if Porter told him to?
Matt Polster would run through 5 brick walls after having the flu the night before and being in the ER and getting IVs at 4 a.m. So,
yeah, he's a man. Porter's actually said that, by the way. He's like, yeah, he's a real man out there. It's like, well, what does that mean? They're all men. Like, he's a real, it's like, good Lord. Like, oh, God. Now, see, you got me going on Porter again. I can't live my life like this. I just want to go back to not caring about what the head coach of the New England Revolution says.
You want to go back to boring Bruce Arena, who said nothing during press conferences, and then answer the questions that were posed to him at press conferences 20 minutes later on the 98.5 interview. That's what we can go back.
I got other things to do, you know? I just want to go back to, yeah, well, we're trying to win soccer games. You know, that's it. That's all I want to hear.
Well, now that we are in the Esmer sucks camp, because that's the camp that I guess we're supposed to be in. I do have some criticism for Esmer tonight. Revs Wolf says, what's with Esmer not passing the ball and taking shots instead? There were at least 2 times today when he should have passed to an open player, but he greedily took a shot instead. Happens in almost every game he plays. Is this just inexperience? And can Porter fix this? Well, Porter, clearly... I forgot that was how that question ended. Porter clearly is trying. I will say, Esmer, at the end of the game, we ripped Christian McCoon for doing this last year. Game's over, just dribble the ball into the corner. Maybe Esmer thought there was a lot more time left, but he takes a shot. It wasn't a very good shot. It was a 2-on-1 opportunity. Could have passed it back to Vrioni, instead kind of takes a weak left-footed shot. That's the one that drove me nuts. Because you either need to score, you need to drive that in the you know, dribble it over to the corner and take as much time as you can off the clock. But again, and there have been moments to, you know, this year, you know, I remember the Ryan Spalding red card of Philly. Like, it's a terrible back pass, like a little bit of, you know, inexperience from Esmer. Like, you know, he's still raw, but the talent is there. But yeah, we saw a little bit of that, you know, not Esmer's best game tonight. So any thought on Esmer? And please keep it negative, because we can't crown him as the next coming.
No, Greg, hold on. You just said, what did Porter tell him after the last game?
No, he needs a goal.
You've got to go and score again.
Yep.
So then tonight he takes shots that he shouldn't take. I wonder why. What was the seed that was planted in the mind of young Esmer? Oh, coach told me I need to go out and score again. So this is an opportunity for me to score. So I'm going to shoot and try and score. But what we know is that the reality with Porter is that when Esmer makes a good decision, Porter takes the credit. When Esmer makes a bad decision, it's Esmer's fault. All of a sudden, he's 19 again, and he's no longer in love with him like he was when he scored. And that's the other thing too. So we follow this here. We're now going to criticize Esmer for the shots he took tonight. Why? Because they didn't go in. Were you criticizing him last week when he scored, or the week before that when he scored? He scored 2 ridiculous goals that most players on this team are incapable of scoring, like even in their dreams on FIFA, in reality, like does not matter. They cannot score those types of goals. And we're all like, oh, Esmer, oh, great goal, great goal. Oh, he took that shot. He got a deflection. Porter's coming out saying, oh, I love this kid. Like, oh, he's brave and blah, 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 blah. And then he doesn't score and it's back to, oh, he's got bad shot selection. Like, come on. It's not fair.
All right. Yeah, you won me over there. I completely changed my I love the that was good. I like that. I'm points for Tom. Tom won, Greg zero. That was good. Big John says this game almost gave me a heart attack. Second half was so poor and should have finished it off. But at least we got the 3 points. Esmer needs to learn what a pass is. My question is, what did you guys think of the referees? And we also got a question via email at revolutionrecap@gmail.com, which you can always send in your questions to revolutionrecap@gmail.com if you do not have Twitter or Instagram or any of the other 7 social media networks that we're on. You can send emails over to revolutionrecap@gmail.com. But he says the Apple TV announcers were clearly alluding to the fact the referee was one-sided when it came to fouls called against Cincinnati. What's your opinion of the fouls called? Tom, thoughts on refereeing tonight?
First of all, the Apple TV guy, he's gonna get himself in trouble. he probably got an email in mid-sentence, like, no. The referee, of course, is not being biased in any way, shape, or form. I don't know. The second yellow for the red card, you know, that was a pretty stupid foul. Like, you're going to get a yellow for that, and you should know better when you're already on a yellow. But I don't know. I thought Verone did a pretty good job of selling some pretty minimal fouls to the referee. It was almost like, you know, like him and the referee are like best friends. I know people are now, of course, you know, we're all turning around on Verone and we're talking about how, like, oh, you know, he did a great job tonight, you know, holding the ball up. And it's like, he felt contact and he fell to the ground several times. But I don't know. It's a strange game. Like, sometimes the ref would call like a nothing foul, and then sometimes it looked like a guy very clearly got cleaned out. And he's like, nah, play on, nothing there. I remember him. I don't remember his name, but I remember him from before. And I don't really remember referees because I don't know. I know there's people out there that, like, when the referees get announced, like, oh yeah, that guy 6 weeks ago on a Tuesday night gave 7 fouls. Like, I don't have time for that nonsense either. But yeah, I thought it was a very up and down performance from the referee.
Yeah. Who was the announcer tonight?
I don't know. I've never heard either one of the two of them in my life.
No.
Hopefully not anytime soon either.
We should, we didn't do the pre-cap episode, so we didn't have them on.
Oh, right. Yeah. I know. I criticized somebody else from Apple TV. You know, I mean, no disrespect, because obviously you work for Apple TV. I'm doing a podcast from my basement. So clearly, you know, you're right. I'm wrong.
No, that's not what I mean. I'm just saying
I do forget, though.
I didn't recognize who it was tonight. So I feel bad.
I don't think I've ever heard them in my life.
I don't know. I don't know who the commentary team was tonight, but let's see. Moving on. Yeah. One comical point I did find, though, is that Acosta and someone else from Cincinnati, the crowd is booing. Acosta is just like getting in the face of the referee. They're screaming, and this other Cincinnati player is screaming. Like, they're both screaming at the referee. The crowd is booing. Everyone's booing, and then suddenly Carlos Gil, I don't know why, just walks right up, and he also starts screaming at the referee too. Not at all reading the room. Carlos, just leave him alone. He's like, I don't know, as if Carlos had to, like, I don't know if he was like helping them out with their defense, or if Carlos was just like mad about something else from a play earlier. Carlos Gil just going over and screaming at the same time that everyone else is screaming at the referee for something clearly completely different. I thought that was hilarious.
I forgot about that. Was
incredible timing.
Yeah, I was like, what is he doing? Like, wait, is he taking Acosta's side?
I think there was someone kicked the ball into the boards. And so I like to think that maybe he was like going over and like yelling that it should have been a red or something like that. I don't know. I don't know what Carlos was thinking on that one. But Steve McGrogan, the team goes from snapping passes to sitting on the ball second half, especially direction from Porter, fatigue, or just complacency. We talked about this a little bit. I think it's probably the Porter is just playing a little too conservatively here, and it's going to bite them. Anything to add? I feel like we've talked about that enough.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't really sit on the ball. They had 37% possession. They just didn't really do much with. They didn't really do much to attacking wise in the second half.
No, I think it was in the first half that we went from pass snapping the ball around to sitting back completely.
Oh, in the first half?
Yes. Yeah.
I don't know. I thought the first half was pretty good.
Yeah. No. Yeah. The big yeah.
Second half was.
I think that's what he's saying. He's saying, is that because of Porter fatigue or just complacency?
And I think it's
strategically Porter.
I think it's yeah. I mean, I think it's Porter. I mean, he brought Mensah on and went to a back five. Like he, this is what he does. He's look, when you're up 2-0, there's two ways to go about it, right? You tell a team at halftime, okay, that's it. Let's shut the game down. Let's not take risks. Let's not get caught forward, right? You take like the pessimistic kill the game off approach. And the other approach is it's 2-0. If we go out there and put another goal past these guys, it's game over. If we get the third goal, it's 3-0. That's it. Game over, and we're getting 3 points, and we get out of here. I personally prefer coaches that at 2-0 are like, let's go out there and kill this game off in the first 10 minutes and get another goal. Porter is not that type of coach.
Mm-hmm. Paulo says, expected our season to turn around after June. Never thought this would happen this early. Everything was going against us, but between improved play and weakened opposition, we've dug out of the basement. I agree with that comment from Paulo. He also says, any update on Chankalai? We already mentioned that Seth reported that Chankalai is out long-term. Also, by the way, while we were recording, Seth Makomer also tweeted out that Caleb Porter expects Dylan Barrero to be back next week. So that is not going to be a long-term injury for Barrero. Chankalai out long-term, Barrero not so much. So some positive news there as well. Tom, I don't think you've talked about Matt Polster enough, so I'll bring him up here. John says, what does Polster have on Porter? He also asks if this is the biggest win in Boston this week. I'd say so. Biggest win since the last Revs win, am I right? Randy also says, thoughts on subbing on Buck for Harks instead of Polster. I wasn't impressed by Polster's play. Thought he should have gone off instead. Then we also got a comment from Derek that says he thought it was a great game for Polster, subpar game for Dewan Jones. So I'll kind of let's start with Polster here first. Thoughts on his performance? And then were you surprised to see him go the full 90 instead of Ian Harks?
I mean, I'm not surprised to see him go the full 90. Like, Porter,
let me rephrase. Would you have taken off Polster instead of Harks?
Of course I would have, honey. Come on. What? It's just funny. Like, Polster gives the ball away, not in a spot that you want to give the ball away in. He just kind of like took like 4 or 5 touches. He was dribbling. He was going nowhere. He was dribbling into other players on the other team, which is usually ill-advised. He gives the ball away. They almost score. And then, the fourth official's board comes up and Harks is the midfielder that is getting subbed off. I mean, like, again, tonight, they had a Cincinnati had a chance in the first half. Polster just let his man make a run. Guy makes a run. He refuses to enter the penalty area. He's like, oh, I'll just let him go. That's all right. Romney will deal with it. No, I don't need to do anything. I'll just stand here. I mean, I'm so sick of talking about Polster. Yeah, he's not good. I'm sorry. And I know people are like, oh, he's out there. He's hustling around and he has to try really hard and hustle because he doesn't know where to go. He's out of position in almost every single moment of the game. So that's why he's this hustling, bustling guy who's running all over the place because he's in the wrong place all the time. And Jones,
you want to talk about Jones?
Yeah, sure. Jones had it's the same guy that said Polster played well, the same guy that said Jones played poorly.
We did also get a comment that Ryan says, I felt Jones did really well tonight. So another kind of opposite reactions there. Dewan Jones, I thought Dewan Jones played really well. He was kind of a threat down the left all night.
Yeah.
There are a couple of, there was one point where I think in the 19th minute, he goes for an interception, he misses it. And then Oriello, I'm mispronouncing his name. I know I am. But he basically drives down for goal, shoots it, just misses nearly, shoots wide of the near post. So that was probably his low point of the night. But even when DJ makes a mistake, he's able to recover it. I thought he did a good job getting up in the attack. has really kind of added a really good element of that offense, especially with Dylan Barrero out. Ema seemed dangerous too. They just seem to both be able to exploit the wings. And yeah, I have no real complaints about Tawan Jones. Looking at his stats, 78% pass possession, 52 touches, 7 touches in the opposition's box, 2 for 2 on tackles, 1, 6 for 10 on ground duels, 1 interception, 1 clearance. I thought he played pretty solidly in both sides. And while I'm on the topic, Matt Polster, 80% pass possession, 56 touches, 1 pass in the final third, dispossessed once, 2 for 2 on tackles, 5 interceptions, 6 recoveries, dribbled past once, 6 for 8 on duels, including 4 for 6 on ground duels and 2 for 2 on aerials. So those are the stats on the overall, but I'll kick it over to you for Tawan Jones. What were your thoughts on Tawan? Any disagreement with what I said on him?
No, he played really well. I mean, he does a good job. You know, Ema, and I mean this in a complimentary way. You know, he plays a simple game. He stays out wide. He makes runs in behind. When he gets the ball, as soon as he sees an opportunity to put a ball into the box, whether it's a cross in the air or, you know, something is slotted back on the ground, you know, again, he gets into good spaces, he makes his runs, and he puts the ball in the penalty area. You know, he's very effective. And he combined well with Jones. If Boateng went wide, Jones made runs through the center and vice versa. And, you know, he defended well for most of the game. And like you said, you know, you got your outside back getting touches in the penalty area. And he got the ball one time. He's kind of surprised. He didn't know what to do with it. But, you know, I think he got a shot away and it got blocked. But, I mean, yeah, he's pretty much everything that they had going in the first half was down the left side. So, yeah, I thought Jones played very well. And again, just thought of, you know, getting to a point, maybe it's going to take 3 more games for Bai to get to the point where he can play, you know, 65, 70 minutes. The thought of finally having Jones and Bai back on the field at the same time, you know, it's going to be to their benefit. You know, they're both really, outstanding attacking outside backs that, you know, that have the speed to recover and get back as well.
Mm-hmm. Agree 100%. And I think once we get Bai back, I mean, that's going to be such a phenomenal lift for that back line. Things are starting to take shape, which is really exciting. So it's going to be, hopefully they continue to trend in the right direction. But yeah, agree with everything you said there. One more Twitter question here. Teal Forever says, is Ivicic good or bad? I can't figure it out. You seem to be more negative than most on Ivicic, I think in general. But so I'll, and I don't know if good, bad is really a good way to assess it. Because I think it's, you know, when you're assessing players, it's more than good and bad. But so far, what's your scouting report from Ivicic and what you've seen and if he's the guy for the Revs?
I mean, I don't think that he's any better than Ravas. But the problem seems to be is that Ravas was playing at the level that he was playing at and the team was losing. And now Ivicic is playing at basically the same level and the team is winning. So people are just happy to latch on to, Ivicic must be better because he's playing and the team's winning than Ravas. And like, I mean, you know, it's a little bit more complicated than that. But if you look at the things that people talk about Ivicic being so great at, one of them is his ability with the ball at his feet. That is not true. It is not true. Statistically, it doesn't bear out. They're pretty much the same in terms of like their passing percentage overall on short passes, medium length passes, and long passes. Ivicic has benefited massively from the fact that the team is almost completely abandoned playing out from the back. They go long on goal kicks all the time now. Ravas, because that was how Porter was trying to play at that time, was you know, making them play out of the back. And we all know that was ineffective. But that wasn't Ravas's decision to play out of the back. That was Porter and his positional play system, which has disappeared, by the way. I haven't heard him talk about how he's completely abandoned playing out of the back and positional play and all that's you know, been, that's all disappeared. But it coincided with Ivicic. So people say, oh, well, Ravas made some mistakes with the ball at his feet. Well, Ivicic just smashes it down the field. Or like tonight, he almost killed somebody. He sliced a left-footed, I don't even know what it was, clearance into the stands. He kicked the ball out. He kicked the ball out straight for a corner for the second week in a row. He was a little lazy with some of his passes. You know, he almost got the ball blocked because he just kind of leaves it hanging out there. And, you know, the 2 goals he gave up last week, I mean, he didn't even move. It's, you know, and his reactions, I don't care what anyone says, his reactions are slow, plain and simple. people think like, oh, he's making all these great saves. A lot of the saves he makes are because he reacts late, and it makes it look like a better save than it actually was. And the goal that he had tonight, by the way, that ball was very, I think it was a great header, but it was very close to him. And again, he didn't even react until the ball was on the line.
See, I disagree. I rate Ivicic higher than Rabas. I don't think he's goalkeeper of the year material. Although he did win player of the week a few weeks ago. So good for him. And probably the worst player of the week nomination of all time. But I agree with everything you're saying in terms of the ball at his feet. He was 35% passing night, 13 for 37. He looks okay. I wasn't too thrilled with Rabas. Rabas looked like an average-ish keeper. I think we've talked about this before, about how Porter clearly didn't like Rabas from the beginning. Saying he was in a competition with Earl Edwards Jr. and as opposed to Ivicic, who came in and won the starting job, being here for 24 hours. So, I understand how they were handled differently, and it probably was a little bit unfair to Rabas. With that being said, I think Ivicic seems to be the overall kind of a better goalkeeper. I know you mentioned the reaction saves and all that. I see a better ability at shot stopping from Ivicic. I don't buy into the ball at his feet narrative. I feel like that's just, I don't know, but I think he's just a better shot stopper than Rabas. And Rabas was a little mistake prone. I know it's a small sample size. It's kind of hard to judge a goalkeeper based on a small sample size, but I think Ivicic was still, if I'm choosing between the two, I'm going with Ivicic over Rabas. And it should be noted too, that I believe it's reported, I don't know the name of the reporter, but apparently some teams are in Poland are looking at Rabas for the Polish league. So apparently Rabas his name has come up internationally as a player who is available. So it seems like he'll be moving back one way or another from the Revolution. So that's also something to keep an eye on. But yeah, I lean with Ivicic. Do I think he's the greatest goalkeeper of all time? No. But I think he has a pretty good track record in MLS, and I'd still give him the nod over Rabas. So I think we disagree with a little bit there.
Yeah, but that's the thing. Like, Ivicic is 29 years old, and he has more MLS experience. This is Rabas's first year in MLS. He's only 26. The guy hasn't even really got like a full grasp of the language yet. And I've heard it must have been 2 or 3 weeks in a row. Broadcasters on Apple TV in particular, like the midweek preview, talking about like how great it was that Caleb Porter is really coming out and supporting Ivicic and letting him know that his coach has got his back. It's like, okay, but he never did that for Rabas. Like, it was almost like Rabas was set up to fail. Like you said, Porter gave him absolutely no public support. The whole entire team was playing poorly. Porter was doing a poor job coaching the team. So Rabas has just been buried. And so, I don't know.
Do you think Rabas has a high ceiling, though? I think that's kind of where for me, and I look at the teams he played for before MLS, like, he never played at this high of a level. And I didn't, with Petrovic, you saw like a few weeks in, like, whoa, this guy's like, he's good. He's good at this. Or, even Matt Turner, who, obviously didn't have any track record when he was named the starter. A few games in, you were like, hey, this guy's like, he's a good shot stopper. He's good at this. Nothing really struck me as like great from Rabas. So I didn't see him as a high ceiling player. And so I'm not saying that, like, if Ivicic doesn't come in and Rabas is still the starter, I don't think I'm that like upset about it. I think he's an average-ish keeper, but I'm not particularly upset that his time as a starter at MLS is coming to an end. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, the Petrovic is that's never going to happen again. I mean, right. Like, I remember, I think maybe after his second start, I was like, okay, well, he's clearly miles better than Matt Turner. And then a couple weeks later, people were like, it was weird. People like almost like afraid to like mention that maybe Petrovic was better. Like, oh, I think he's kind of like, I think he's just about as good as Turner. Like, no, he's not. He's substantially better.
Tom, you did not listen to our podcast when Petrovic came in. We were all over that. I think like four games in.
Yeah. Well, I mean, just like where was I at that point? Twitter and
people don't want to make a jump right out of the gate. Because
why?
Well, two or three games is a small sample size. So, you feel like
I'll be that
you know, you're replacing the best goalkeeper in the league with this other kid who you just bought for $700,000, you know, from Serbia. You know, like after two or three games, like I think a lot of people don't want to be like, well, you know, I'm sold after two or three games. I think people, you know, need a larger sample size to be convinced. But with Petrovic, he clearly was a special talent.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I mean. I mean, it's very evident. So, no, look, does Ravis have the same ceiling as Petrovic? No, but this team's not going to have a player like I just don't like the way that the situation was handled.
I agree.
Ivicic, like, okay, Ivicic is playing well. Well, when he goes through a bad run of form, apparently he might not be the nicest guy to have around. His last team, like, you know, like didn't want him there anymore. You know, they just told him to go away with 3 weeks left in the season. Like, just get out. Like, that's that type of stuff. I think that rears its head at some point. If that's the type of person you are, that's the type of person you are, and we're going to see that rear its head at some point.
Hmm. Yes. Would you? So, if you were the coach and you had to make a decision, if you had between starting Ravas and Ivicic, who would you go with?
I think I go with Ravas.
Okay. Yeah. All right. That's it. Oh, we have one more question here. Although we've touched on a little bit, it's from Threads. Be our friend on Threads. I don't like Porter, but I'm willing to be convinced. How much credit is he due? And can we talk about the very convincing Brioni lookalike scoring a brace? How do we get more of this? We've talked about Brioni a lot. We've talked about Porter turning the ship around and how much credit he is due. He's on pace to be the MLS coach of the month. And I think he deserves all the credit in the world. Tom, I assume there is no pushback from you whatsoever, correct?
I mean, I don't know. How much credit do you want to give him for? Again, you know, the thing is if I would be perfectly happy to give him credit if he came out and said what actually has transpired instead of the nonsense that he continues to say every week that, like, this is all part of the plan and the guys are starting to understand what I want from them. It's like, no, you stopped playing out from the back. You stopped with your positional play. You stopped having 60-65% possession of the ball. You started playing players that you dropped. You started playing Dave Romney when you wanted to get rid of him. You've been forced to play Esmer. You've played Ian Harkes 2 weeks in a row when you didn't really want to, because you just wanted to keep rolling K out there. It's like, so no, the things that are happening because he's doing the opposite of what he said he was going to do when he got here. And he's playing players that he had deemed not good enough, not more than 6 weeks ago.
But devil's advocate, doesn't he deserve credit for changing the way that they are playing?
Yeah. If he came out and said,
They're winning. But they're winning. What does it matter how he says it? You know what I mean?
No, I think he said
everything you if he came out and said everything you said, but the results are the same. You know what I mean? Like, you still can give him credit even if he's saying the wrong things.
No, I don't. You can't give him credit for Romney. That was an accident.
Okay,
Kessler got suspended, and Romney came back in. That wasn't a plan. He had to do that. He had to play Harkes and Buck last week, right? He's had to play Esmer. He's had to do that. Even Veroni, right? He talks about how, like, you know, he's sticking by his man and he's sticking with Veroni and the goals are going to come. What other choice does he have? Bobby Wood can't physically play soccer. So even Veroni, you can't give him that much credit for Veroni either, because he has no alternative. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, I walk out of my house every day and I get into a Volkswagen Jetta and I drive it to work. Do you know why? Because that's the car that I have. I don't have another option. I don't walk out and see a Volkswagen Jetta and a Ferrari and go, I think I'll take the Jetta again today. The Ferrari's awfully nice, but, you know, boy, gas prices have been pretty high. So I think I'll just take the boring old Jetta into work. Like, he has no choice. He has to play Veroni. Or what's the alternative? Who else could he play there?
The Ferrari?
There is no Ferrari. They don't have one. The Revs don't want to spend the type of money that you have to spend to get a Ferrari.
Tom, that wraps this up.
So we're stuck with a Volkswagen Jetta up top.
Scoring a brace. Tom, come on.
We've won four in a row.
Yep. And
now he's dragging goals left and right with his left foot. Well, that was not left and right, mostly with the left and with the head. But you know what? Things are good. We're moving in the right direction. And we're in a spot that we didn't expect to be a month ago. Right, Tom?
Yeah, no, it's good. I mean, it's mostly good. The team is winning and acquiring points. The way in which they did it tonight, like, I mean, let me ask you this, Greg. Do you want to watch that type of game like 7 or 8 more times this season?
Not 7 or 8 more times.
Yeah.
No. But they went on the road. And it's crazy too, because I can't even really fully. Even if I was to be the full devil's advocate, like believe all this stuff, like Cincinnati was still missing players. You know, if they're playing a full squad Cincinnati team, are they, you know, are they winning that game? Like maybe not. Like I know like the Red Bulls missed some players. Like there's a lot there's still like a bit of good luck sprinkled in. So I am in agreement here with you. But like, yeah, like they can't win games like that. And like, again, like in Nashville, where you know they're Nashville is kind of the more egregious example too, with 2 penalty kicks and then a deflected shot off of the post, and they need a really good solid win, and it feels like they're winning a lot of one goal games where the margin of error isn't really that big, even in games where they come out and they dominate the first half. It's just not being able to put them away. So that's the next step they got to get to. But as I say, I think the beginning of the season was such crap, and everyone played below their level and what we expected them to be, that, you know, I'll take ugly wins. You know what I mean? So, I want to be very clear. I don't want in August or whatever, in League's Cup or in September, going down the stretch, like ugly wins, they might get us in the playoffs, but they're not going to get us much further than that, which I think we're at the same spot.
Yeah, no, I mean, yeah, winning in a not so entertaining way due to, you know, a beneficial group of circumstances is certainly a lot better than losing every single week, for sure. But yeah, and look, like last week's game was an enjoyable game, and Vancouver had most of their players, and Vancouver, I believe, had been off the previous week, and so they actually had, you know, they were well rested. Vancouver's actually a good road team as well. I think they'd won 4 games on the road to that point, so they played a good team that was rested, had most of their players or all of their best players available, and they scored 3 goals and they won the game. You know, that was genuinely a good performance against a good team, and they've still only had 1 of those.
Mm-hmm. Yep. But right direction. So and I cannot wait for Caleb Porter to win Coach of the Month. That'll be very funny to me. Tom, that wraps us up here today. Any final thoughts, and where can people find you on social media?
Final thoughts. I don't know. Like, it's good that they're out of last place. They've got some games in hand. So if they're able to get some points from those, you know, they've only still played 17 games, so they're at the halfway point of the season. You know, it's not that bad. It's not that difficult to make the playoffs. So, yeah, you know, things are headed in the right direction in terms of results. I feel like this week's result is a bit of a step back from last week, because last week was genuinely entertaining to watch for the entire game. And, you know, you really can't say that tonight. It's good. By coming back, I think, is probably the one positive to take out of this game. I guess Borrero, it sounds like his injury isn't, you know, going to be a long-term injury. So, you know, if we can get by Borrero back, it's going to be interesting when, you know, you get to July 1st. Is Esmer going to stick around? Is Buck going to stick around? I think that's going to be a bit of a sore point for a lot of people if we start to see the younger, exciting players move on without really having had an opportunity to make a big impact here.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, yeah, people, you can find me on Twitter, TPinZone 343. Writing for the Blazing Musket as well. I'm not sure what I'm going to write about next week. And so, yeah, I'll figure something out and put it together, and you'll be able to find it on the Blazing Musket.
Well, and if people haven't read it too, they should read your Q2 report, which I agreed very much And I also got a laugh at you using the terms headwinds and tailwinds.
That was good, right?
Very, very good commitment to the bit here of the financial analysis. I enjoyed it very much as someone who kind of works in that field. Final thoughts here for me. Carlos Hill is closing in on Steve Ralston's club record for assists. I believe Ralston is at 73, and Carlos Hill is sitting on 69 assists after tonight. So a nice performance from Carlos Hill. We didn't even talk about Hill tonight and his performance, but very nice performance. And he's chasing down that record, and he'll pass it very soon. Also, just wanted to mention that it is my birthday later on this week, and the best gifts. And by the way, I know you're Tom. You probably do not get this inside reference, but for the OG listeners, I do have to say I did eat at Applebee's this week, celebrated my birthday, had the boneless buffalo wings, still as good as ever. But I do want for my birthday a new review on iTunes. We haven't gotten an iTunes review in a little bit, so my birthday is mid next week. I am expecting fresh iTunes reviews from all of you. 5 stars, please make this the best birthday ever for me. I would appreciate it very much. The big 3-5. It's depressing that we are coming up to another half decade, but here we are. But if you don't follow us on social media already, make sure you're following us at Revolution Recap on Twitter or X or whatever it's called. Also, be sure to follow Revolution Recap on Facebook, Instagram, Threads. Be our friend on Threads. We still have a Blue Sky account. We have not deactivated it yet, but if you're there, sure, follow us there. Why not? Also, by the way, if we get to 500 Instagram followers, that would be wonderful as well. So make sure you're following us on Instagram, trying to make more of an active effort to stay update there. And also, of course, make sure you rate and review us, iTunes, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts, especially iTunes. And make sure you wish me happy birthday in your reviews. Also, make sure to check out our friends over at the Blazing Musket, the best New England Revolution coverage around, at Blazing Musket on Twitter. Be sure to subscribe to their Substack. Make sure you get all of the weekly news so you can read all of the confusing Caleb Porter quotes about Esmer as they come out. Thank you again for listening to Revolution Recap. We'll be back next week. And also thank you to our sponsors, BetOnline. We'll be back next week following... Who do they play next week, Tom?
Is it Columbus?
Columbus. We will be back following next week's game against Columbus, which I know will be another win. They'll run the table in June. Caleb Porter, legendary turnaround, legendary coach of the month performance from Caleb Porter. 5-0 in June, next week against Columbus. Let's go, refs.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.